people don't teach their children enough. You know, it's take your children home, plop them in front of the TV, turn on the cartoons, walk away, go do your own thing.
What I see is we have perfectly set up our environment and our policies to make people fat.
Boys and girls today are taller, heavier, fatter, rounder, weaker, and less flexible than kids in 1981.
Hello, everyone. I'm Suhanna Marchand, sitting in for Duncan McHugh. Welcome to Cross Country Checkup.
We are not going to medicate our way out of obesity problem, and we are not going to solve it with a few extra bicycle lanes. We should be taking serious actions through prices and regulation on the foods that people can access and eat.
Our question today, what's the best way to tackle Canada's weight problem? Call us at 1-888-416-8333. Here's that number again, 1-888-416-8333.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down, just a spoonful.
You know who that is, Mary Poppins. Maybe she said it best, a spoonful of sugar. Nothing like it to sweeten the medicine and to sweeten everything else we consume. It seems we're only too happy to run with that message. We've never had so much choice when it comes to our lifestyle. At the same time, we've never had so much science explaining how we can lead healthier, more active lives. And yet, as a nation, we are carrying far too much weight. Global figures from the OECD, that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, say Canadians are the seventh heaviest in a global count that looked at 35 countries. According to the most recent statistics, one quarter of Canadians are obese. Our problem with the pounds has got the attention of the Senate. In 2016, a report looked into the latest statistics and consequences and put it bluntly. There is an obesity crisis in this country. Canadians are paying for it with their wallets and with their lives. Canada is not alone, of course. I mean, obesity is a global issue. And to put it into context, recent research from Imperial College London shows a disturbing trend. In 1975, there were 5 million obese girls. And guess what? By 2016, that number had risen to 50 million. Let's look at the boys. 1975, obesity rate, 6 million. At the last count, well, that figure had become 74 million. So, it's clear we have a problem. The question is, how do we tackle it? Weight Watchers has come up with one approach. Not everyone thinks it's an advisable one, have to tell you that. This summer, teens between 13 and 17 will be entitled to free Weight Watchers membership. A proactive step for a demographic that is becoming dangerously overweight? Or is the company instead engaging in the kind of body shaming that some say leads to years of pointless dieting and negative self-esteem? We want to hear from you today. Do you see our widening girth as a problem that needs to be solved? And if so, what can be done? Is it up to the government to implement strategies that will influence our choices? Whether that's, you know, increased taxes on unhealthy foods and beverages, or maybe even outright bans of certain foods? Or does the issue of our own body weight and health fall directly to us as individuals? I mean, after all, we do have more information than ever before on what we should and should not be eating and how active we should be. What about the cost, though, of eating healthy food and the availability of healthy options? We know that some communities in Canada simply do not have access to the type of food that the experts recommend. We're going to touch all of these subjects today, but we want to hear what you think. So give me a call, 1-888-416-8333. And we'd especially like to hear from you if you have perhaps struggled with your weight. I mean, really, who hasn't, right? How has that battle affected you, though? Have you been able to change it, or have you accepted that, you know, you're built as you're built? Is there simply too much emphasis on size and appearance? We know being thin doesn't mean being fit. And having an imperfect BMI doesn't mean you're a couch potato. Our weight loss programs, don't want to go into individual ones because that would eat up a lot of time, but there are many of them. We know that. We want to hear your experience with some of those programs. Were you helped? What were some of the pitfalls you faced in trying to shed the pounds? So here's our question today. How should we tackle Canada's weight problem? The number again, 1-888-416-8333. Other options, though, you can send us an email to checkup@cbc.ca, and you can engage with other Checkup listeners through social media. Search for Checkup CBC on Twitter and Facebook, or go to our website at cbc.ca/checkup, where you can join that live online chat. I'm Suhanna Marchand on CBC Radio 1, on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 169, and online at cbc.ca. This is Cross Country Checkup. My first guest is Senator Art Eggleton. He's a former mayor of Toronto and now chair of the Standing Committee on Social Affairs, Science and Technology. That's the committee that published a study called Obesity in Canada, a whole of society approach for a healthier Canada. I caught up with him just before we went to air. Hi, Senator. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you, Suhanna.
I want to know about this study because it was done 2 years ago. And excuse the pun, but is it sitting on a shelf gaining weight somewhere?
We're not letting it sit on a shelf. We're following it up. We think it's still a very significant issue in our country, and we think it should be moving faster. But there is movement that is happening on it. And we'll continue to follow it up. We just had a meeting with the minister a couple of weeks ago, in fact.
And what was it about this study that so surprised you that makes you want to follow it up?
Well, we were hearing from various experts in the testimony presented to the Senate committee that obesity in adults had increased 2 times, and more than doubled over the last 30 years, and more than tripled for children over that same period of time. And obesity frequently leads to chronic diseases, and chronic diseases that mean a lot of people suffering, a lot of people losing lives, and it's costing the healthcare system billions of dollars.
And that would be one of the reasons. Money talks. We know that. One of the reasons for acting on this. Yeah, of course health does. And it's costing our health care system, as you say. So it's a two-pronged hit that we're taking as a nation. So why is it that we are still seeing these rates increase, despite the interest and the money it's costing?
It's the food culture in our society. We described it as an obesogenic environment. People looking for fast foods, highly processed foods. In fact, 62% of the foods that are consumed by Canadians are processed, highly processed foods, fast foods, etc. And these are high in sugar, fat, and salt to a degree in excess of what the human body needs. And as a result, this kind of obesity is rising. So we need to change a number of things in terms of the advice and the promotion of healthy foods, and also in terms of exercise. That's a part of it, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go in through the medical sort of things with you because obviously you're not here as a doctor, sir. You're here as a senator who is the chair, and you've done this study. And obesogenic society, by the way, that's a new term for me. I do want to know, if we are in this obese society and we need to eat healthy food, why do they cost more than all that processed stuff you were talking about?
Well, that's a good point. And we suggest that we need to have some change in that. First of all, we need to promote healthy foods. And I think the nutrition labeling is a big part of doing that. And the minister has agreed to front of package labeling so that, in fact, we can spell it out whether something is high in salt or sugar or fat to a degree that is unhealthy. So that will help people in that respect.
Well, not if you're earning minimum wage, and
well,
in different parts
true.
Of the country,
that's
it's that.
That's very true. You see, we've got to look at people low income. You see, this is one of the problems. Lower income people are amongst the greatest part of the population suffering from obesity simply because they can't afford a lot of so-called healthier foods, or they're not available to them very easily in a lot of their neighborhoods. We find that the marketing is excessive in terms of the kinds of foods that are not the healthiest. In fact, to children, about 90% of the foods that are marketed to children have higher contents of sugar, salt, and fat than children should have. So if you're low income, you're looking for something that you can reasonably afford. So we've got to do better in that. I think one thing we could do is let's put a tax on sugary drinks, and let's use that money to help subsidize healthier food.
And also, what do you think the soda pop industry is going to say?
Well, let them adapt. Let them adapt with less sugar or sweeteners. Let them find ways of helping people to have healthier lifestyles and not get into these chronic diseases. They've done it in a number of countries already, and they're about to do it in the UK, so I think we should be doing it here as well. And use that money to help pay for healthier foods for lower-income people.
So as you try to tackle the cost of healthy foods, as you try to tackle perhaps a tax on pop, one of the other recommendations for the government was a ban on advertising of unhealthy food to children. I remember when I was a kid, Senator, I really wanted an easy bake oven. I never got that easy bake oven, but advertising works. We know that. So where does that recommendation stand 2 years down the road?
Well, in fact, the Supreme Court of Canada said advertising to children is inherently manipulative, and it is. And we now have, after our report that recommended a ban on advertising to children, we followed it up with a draft piece of legislation, which has passed the Senate and is now in the House of Commons, and the government says they're going to support it. They say they will put through this bill that will ban advertising to children of unhealthy foods. So that's a very positive step. They're following up on it, and that's good.
Final question for you as well, Senator. You heard from a wide variety of people in making this report, including food manufacturers. You know that expression, it takes a village to raise a child, right? Well, does it take an entire society, including food manufacturers and doctors and advertisers, to create a healthy child? What does that village look like down the road?
Well, it does. It takes all of these things. We said to in the front of our report, we called it Obesity in Canada, a whole of society approach for a healthier Canada. We need to have, for example, doctors need to be more engaged in advising people about lifestyle changes, whether it's more exercise or better diets. Maybe they should also be working with exercise instructors and perhaps even writing out a prescription saying you need to get so much exercise, you need to get 30 minutes a day or whatever of exercise, even if it's just walking. We need to engage everybody in this kind of thing. If we're going to cut down on the advancing obesity rates, the advancing overweight rates, there's a lot more people that are also overweight and are getting on the edge of obesity. So if we're going to really contain this, it's going to take everybody getting involved. And it's going to take also the kind of exercise programs. For example, Participation got some grant money in this particular budget. It was something we also recommended, that since they were a well-known brand in terms of exercise and lifestyle activity. So all of those things in combination involve a whole lot of different organizations and people.
We'll see where this goes. And you know what? Let's hope we're not doing a checkup 2 years from now to see where all of this stands as obesity rates increase. I thank you for your time, Senator.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Senator Art Eggleton is chair of the Standing Committee on Social Affairs, Science and Technology, the committee that published the study called Obesity in Canada, a Whole of Society Approach for a Healthier Canada. You're listening to Cross Country Checkup. I'm Suhanna Marchand, and we are talking about what can be done to bring down obesity rates in this country. I mean, how much is our health an individual responsibility? On the other hand, what role can government play to help Canadians lead healthier lives? Here's our phone number, 1-888-416-8255. 8333. Love to hear from you. Our email address, if you would prefer to check in with us that way, is checkup@cbc.ca. Or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Checkup CBC. I want to go to the phones right now because some people have taken advantage of that phone number, 1-888-416-8333. Richard Kolsky joins me from the West Coast. How are things in Vancouver, Richard?
Not as sunny as it's forecast, but we'll take it. Not pouring rain. It was sleeting earlier.
Well, you're probably in the fetal position giving us a call then right now. I want to hear your thoughts on this obesity challenge we are facing as a nation.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling. You look around you. I just want to give a couple of quick examples. I mean, it could go on all day because I do study this personally myself a lot. It's just a pet subject of mine. Okay, on the subject of the people that can't afford to eat healthily, I've never really got into the details of this, but I've gotten into eating lentils and beans, for example. These things are cheap, dried lentils and beans. Mm-hmm. You can cook a whole pot of this stuff, the healthiest food on earth, for practically nothing, like a couple of bucks.
We know the food guide also calls for fresh fruit and fresh vegetables as well, though, Richard.
This is true. This is true. But when you're talking, I'm buying potato chips because I can't buy healthy food, that's wrong. But we need education as well in there.
So let
me
ask you.
Don't know.
Let me ask you this: when we were talking about healthy eating equity, if you will, work with me on that, because we have pay equity, we have gender equity, but let's look at healthy eating equity. You don't buy that the issue is cost.
Not completely. To some degree, yes. But not completely.
So how will education turn that into healthy eating equity into a positive?
Well, teach people what they can do. Okay, I know I'm a bit extreme, but yesterday I cooked homemade poutine.
Mm-hmm.
I got potatoes, I made them into French fries, I baked them in the oven, I made gravy, I boiled chicken bones to make the gravy. And you know what? Those chicken bones cost me nothing. They would have been in the green bin otherwise. Now, I was in Costco the other day, and it's $8.50 for a liter of no-sodium chicken broth.
So it's expensive.
I didn't spend that $8.50. So you know what? A really good education, nutrition, would go a long way. Not completely. It's always going to be easier for rich people and harder for poor people.
Richard, I want to thank you for your time. You've brought up a really good point, not only about cost, but about time, because I bet you boiling those chicken bones took a lot of time. And if you've got two jobs and you've got three kids to feed.
You know how long it took me to bring those to a boil? About 5 minutes. Then you turn it on low. You go about your day. 24 hours later, you've got fantastic chicken broth. You don't do any. People think it takes a lot of time. It doesn't.
All right.
It takes 24 hours. You got to be looking ahead a little bit. More education.
Richard, good points that you've made. I got
to
leave you there because I got a bunch of people waiting on the phone. But I totally appreciate your thoughts, Richard, and I like your time. Melanie Oates from St. John's, Newfoundland. So we'll go to the other end of the country. Melanie, it's Suhanna in Toronto. What do you make of this weight problem we have in our country, obesity problem?
Well, I don't really want to address the idea of a weight problem because I'm not sure, what that exactly means. But coming from the perspective of the whole Weight Watchers targeting teenagers and things,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a teen who dieted a lot, and that diet parlayed into a pretty severe eating disorder. And so I think, you know, this targeting of teens that way is like severely dangerous.
Is it important, however, for teens to know what a calorie is, what different foods will provide them in terms of energy, protein, that kind of thing? I'm wondering if there is an alternate way of introducing teens to healthy eating that may involve counting certain things.
I think the problem more so than learning what a calorie is and learning like how to restrict your food is, you know, instead of an obesity epidemic, Canada has a bit of a fat phobia epidemic, I would argue, and a bit of an obsession with diet culture. So I think the solution maybe could lie in, you know, teaching teens about celebrating people of all body types and focusing more on, you know, hobbies and interests and their passions, and not like, you know, when I was a teenager with an eating disorder, I found myself at 20 years old in university and I had no idea what I was interested in or what I was passionate about because mm-hmm. I wasted all those years obsessed with dieting.
How are you doing, Melanie, health-wise?
Much better now. I've been in recovery for about 10 years, and that, you know, has its ups and downs, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's a daily thing, and my initial thoughts are often still eating disorder type thoughts, but I'm able to, you know, bring them to a healthier place for sure.
We're certainly talking about relationships with foods. We can't help it when we talk about weight. What was it, final question for you, Melanie, because I know you probably want to go, but what was it that really turned your relationship around when you think about food that perhaps led you to a healthy road?
I think really learning about, like, now there's such an opportunity to kind of curate your own experience in terms of what you're exposed to, like, on the internet. You know, you can follow on social media all types of, like, people in the body positivity movement, and you can see, you know, people with normally marginalized body types living these really rich, fulfilling lives, and, you know, kind of focusing on that really helped me to break out of that toxic mindset.
I really want to thank you for taking the time to call us, Melanie, and for sharing your story, and I wish you continued health.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Melanie Oates joining us from St. John's, Newfoundland. Sarah Bunch has been waiting on the phone as well, and she's going to talk to us as well. She's in Vail Mount, British Columbia. Hello to you, Sarah.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm well, thanks. We're talking about food. There are lots of different avenues, of course, the cost of eating healthy, the body issues of, you know, having to lose weight because some social thing tells you to. What's your point on our obesity issue in Canada?
Sure. Yeah, no, just to kind of touch on the last girl that was talking, you know, relationships with food, I think, are really interesting. In our relationship concerning the value of food, I mean, so we have so much access right now. There's so much food being thrown away on a massive, massive level, mm-hmm. all this food going into landfills, and also on an everyday level, you know, like a little bit of food on the plate, you know, gets scraped right into the garbage, and that makes food is not serving us. We are not serving it, and it is not serving us, and I think that's a huge part of, you know, the reality of obesity, and that is a byproduct. Obesity is a byproduct of our devaluation of food.
So how do we change our relationship with food to one that values it?
That's a great question. I think that taking time with our food, I know this might sound a little hokey or cheesy, but also touching on like the first conversation that you had, and taking time, and yes, it does take time with food, but we have to understand that it is our lifeblood, and it is serving us, like, if we let it, right?
Yep.
I know it's easy. It's so easy, the whole grab and go, you know?
Yep.
But if we don't take that time in and realize that it is a living thing, you know, like, it is a part of our earth, like, it comes from plants. Without plants, we're nothing, and I think that's another aspect is, you know, most people's plates, it's a cultural norm that half of our plate is from animal products, whether it's meat or mm-hmm. dairy. It is very heavily animal-based, and that's also very expensive, right? So,
and you know what, Sarah, we're going to get into that issue of cost and healthy eating equity. So I hope you continue to listen in. I want to thank you for taking the time to call in.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay. Sarah mentioned that grab-and-go thing. Just on an aside, when my partner Peter and I were in Europe last November in Paris, one of the things we noticed is that people don't walk and eat. Like, take a look around you when you're in a big city in Canada. How many people are walking with a coffee, or they're eating, whether it's maybe a roti or a pita or whatever, a bagel, and they're walking and doing it. And we stopped at a corner and looked, and we couldn't find people doing that. They sit down, they enjoy their meal, they have this relationship with food that is in includes time and patience. I don't know, maybe it means nothing, but it certainly struck me. My next guest is Dr. Tom Warshawski, a pediatrician and chair of the Childhood Obesity Foundation, and we have reached Dr. Warshawski in Kelowna, B.C. Hello to you, sir.
Hello, Suanna. How are you?
I'm very well. We're talking about relationships, and not just with each other, but with our food. One of the problems, perhaps, is we have a bad relationship with our food because we have a weight issue in Canada. What do you see as our relationship? How would you describe it?
Well, I think it's problematic, and I want to just kind of reorient people around, I think, what the most important thing and what the source of the obesity report of the Senate was. It's really all about health. And we know that the type of food we eat influences our health. It actually adversely, in terms of our current food environment, increases the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, cancers, hypertension, stroke. It also has effects on cognition. It leads to increased risks of Alzheimer's disease, and it leads to obesity. So obesity or excess adiposity is unhealthy in and of itself, but it's also a marker for our adverse obesogenic environment and our relationship with food. So, in fact, I think there's an increasing consensus on what we need to do to have a better relationship with our food and to eat better. The hard part, though, really is to embrace those lifestyle habits and implement them in our lives.
And talking about embracing them, should we be doing that earlier? You're a pediatrician, sir. I'm wondering if the problem of obesity and that negative relationship with food is showing up earlier and earlier in your exam room.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we know the statistics are that the rates of overweight and obesity have more than doubled for overweight and tripled for obesity since 1978 till now. We plateaued over the last 10 to 15 years, but it's a huge problem. And because of the habits that we ingrain in our children while they're young and up until graduation from high school, the problem just gets worse. So when they graduate from high school, probably about a third of teens are overweight and obese. By the time someone gets to be 40 years old, it's 60 to 70% of adults. This
Wow.
is a huge problem.
No kidding. So what do you say when a parent brings in their child and you're having a discussion about food and what kinds of things they're eating and perhaps there is an issue with weight? What do you say?
Well, I think that the evidence is really coalesced around a few things, and it'll be consistent with what some of your callers have already said. One of the number one drivers of excess weight gain and of ill health, even regardless of your weight, is too much sugar in our diet. So
yes.
The obvious culprits are sugary drinks, which are 100% sugar with no nutritive value. This is just a bad product. It should be consumed as little as possible.
Yes.
But sugar is added to roughly two-thirds of processed foods in Canada and probably across the world. So we have to really change our relationship with food and decrease the obvious things like sugary drinks. And Senator Eggleton talked about taxing sugary drinks. That would be a good way to do it. But also really diminish the processed foods in our diet. Other thing that we have to do is really cut back on refined flour. So when you take something like whole grain and you mill it, you strip away the germ and the bran, you're left with just that kernel that's left, which is primarily all starch. It almost acts like a simple sugar. So there's really good evidence that if you take the refined flours out of your diet and substitute whole grains, brown rice, steel-cut oats, quinoa, that sort of thing, you change your metabolism, you improve your health and decrease your risk of overweight and obesity. And the third really important thing is maximizing vegetable intake, particularly green above ground vegetables. And getting back to one of your callers also said, the fourth thing that's so important is to cook whole real foods, cook them at home and eat with friends and family. This doesn't only improve your own physical health, but it includes mental health, climate health, planet health. It's good for everybody. So mm-hmm. we do have to change our relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to cost some money. It does cost a bit more time, but we would all benefit from those changes.
You know, one of the things in that report that Senator Art Eggleton was talking about comes from the title. It was the whole society approach. And when you talk about this, you know, large approach here and changing our relationship and what we eat and in more vegetables, less processed, et cetera, I get intimidated because it seems like there's so much stuff I have to do to be healthy. Like, just give me a bag of chips and get it over with.
No way, Suanna, it's not that important. I mean, the worst thing is to get too intimidated by it. And sometimes a report that says whole of society, people shrug their shoulders and say, what can I do? Well, it can start with breakfast. for breakfast, don't have a sugary cereal, don't have a bagel, have an egg, have some steel-cut oats. Start with your first meal of the day. For your lunch, don't choose those sugary things. Don't choose those processed foods. There's a lot that we can do just ourselves. Don't drink sugary drinks. If you do those things, you will immediately improve your environment. And there are some really good policy steps that government is taking. Senator Eagleton talked about the bill that's come through the Senate. Senator Nancy Greenraid, who used to market Mars bars, was the sponsor of this bill, which is to restrict the marketing of unhealthy foods and beverages to kids. Now, it's not perfect. It only goes to those 12 years of age and under. We know that the food industry targets teens.
Yes.
Teens have discretionary income. They're not so closely supervised by their parents, and they are at risk for being marketed to, but it's certainly a good start. We'd really like to see them do something like Senator Eagleton said, put that tax on sugary drinks, use that money to subsidize vegetables. We know that there's at least two studies, one from the U.S., one from Australia, that says that is one of the biggest bangs for your buck you can get into policy levers. So I'm optimistic. I think more and more people are aware of what constitutes good eating and what constitutes good policy.
You know what, Dr. Warshawski, I want to bring in one of our guests as well, or one of our callers. Anne-Marie has been waiting on the line. Her name is Anne-Marie Elderkin. She's in Nanaimo, B.C. And Dr. Warshawski, would you mind perhaps dealing with one of, or taking on one of her comments? Anne-Marie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
So when we talk about losing weight, I understand you lost a whole bunch of weight. Can you just share your story in about, you know, 15, 20 seconds and tell us what that situation is?
Okay. I grew up dealing with childhood sexual abuse, bullying, family violence. And then when I got married, I had family violence as well. And I used food to cope. And finally, in my 30s, I went up to 395 pounds and the doctor read me the Riot Act and told me I had to lose 100 pounds or I was in line for a heart attack and stroke. And so I cut back from 16 cups of carbs a day to 2 cups of carbs a day because with my income, I only had $125 a month for groceries, so I bought potatoes and pasta. Mm-hmm. And so I changed that kind of eating, and I started walking 15 minutes a day and built up to 2 hours a day with a good buddy.
Anne-Marie, let me just stop you there. Dr. Warshawski, you've been listening to this. The relationship that our caller, Anne-Marie, actually had with food, obviously you can see, was one of fulfilling something. But then she made that sea change. How do we motivate those who are perhaps not 100 pounds overweight, but maybe 20 or 30 pounds overweight, to motivate themselves to change that relationship with food, like Anne-Marie did?
Well, I think part of it, I mean, kudos to Anne-Marie. Her story is altogether too common, especially people that get into very, very high degrees of an overweight status. And she has just made some amazing changes, which speaks to her own character and fortitude. And I suspect that she may have had some other support there as well. So how do we motivate people? Well, number one is education. A lot of people are unaware of the role of sugar, how pervasive it is in all our products, and cutting back on sugar. That's the bedrock. The second thing that Anne-Marie did was she really got rid of a lot of her carbs, the things that we are often told are healthy, like granola bars or pasta, that sort of thing, and potatoes. And she was able to make that change. So I think letting people know, first off, educate them. This is actually things that you've been told are really good for you, maybe like juice, really aren't that good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way you can change your diet, the way you eat. And I guess I want to underscore, change your diet, not dieting, not trying to starve yourself, but change the way you're eating, and likely the pounds will follow themselves. But more importantly, your health will improve.
Dr. Warshawski, hold on with me while I just go back to Anne-Marie for a moment. Anne-Marie, I just want to know how you're doing now. You've obviously had some really tough times in your life. How are you doing now with your weight, with your health?
Well, since I moved to Nanaimo, I've lost another 65 pounds, so I'm down to 260. And I did that by cutting back on wheat and dairy.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I try to be gluten-free most of the time, but I find that really difficult and challenging. And I'm trying to be more physically active than I had been, even though I have osteoarthritis and sciatica. And but hopefully I'll be treated for the arthritis, and then I'll be able to do even more walking.
Good. Well, listen, I wish you the best with that exercise. I want to thank you for calling and sharing your story. That's Anne-Marie Elderkin in Nanaimo, B.C. Dr. Warshawski, Anne-Marie talked in terms of numbers. You know, lost 60 pounds further. I'm down to 200 and so on. And numbers are an important part of our conversation when we talk about weight. Do we put too much of an emphasis on that?
Almost always. The most important thing that we can do is change the way we ate. So, again, from Anne-Marie's story, I think there's a lot of important things for the listeners to hold on to. One is that too often in society we attribute someone who's overweight or morbidly overweight is to gluttony, sloth, self-indulgence. Mm-hmm. Anne-Marie's story is altogether too typical. There were some significant things that happened to her in her life, also complicated by poverty, and that's where she drifted towards, and it gets to be a vicious cycle. It takes an inordinate amount of personal strength to get out of that cycle, and that, luckily for Anne-Marie, she possessed that. What she talked about in terms of changing her life around wasn't, I did all this, I starved myself. She changed the way she ate, and the pounds followed themselves. Now, from her description, she isn't sleek, but she is certainly quite healthy. If she's walking, she's eating the way she is, mm-hmm. if we were to look at her metabolism, we looked at her blood lipids, we looked at her cardiovascular fitness, she will likely be a fit individual. And we know that when you look at those numbers, so getting back to your question about the numbers, if we look at that group of people that are obese, so BMI greater than 30, mm-hmm. fully at least 20% will have no physical illness and will have, in fact, a totally normal lifespan because of the healthy habits. So Anne-Marie has got those healthy habits in line, and if she doesn't smoke with those sort of habits, she should have an actual great lifespan and a healthy lifestyle. So sometimes we can focus far too much on the numbers. Not to say that we should ignore the numbers. They're an indication of unhealthy lifestyles. And excess adiposity in and of itself can be problematic. Fat is a active endocrine tissue. It secretes kinins, which these are chemicals which move away from the fat cells into other organs that can cause heart disease, cause type 2 diabetes. So we can't ignore those numbers, but more and more important, we know now, is those healthy behaviors.
We're going to talk about some of the illnesses caused by obesity, including diabetes, further in our program. But Dr. Tom, I want to thank you for taking the time. You've been great to speak with our callers, and I appreciate the insight you've given us today.
My pleasure, Samantha. I really appreciate your bringing this very important topic to the attention of Canadians.
Well, I'm learning stuff, and whenever I figure I'm learning something, then I'm interested and I'm good to go. Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Tom Warshawski is a pediatrician and chair of the Childhood Obesity Foundation. You are listening to Cross Country Checkup, and we are talking about being overweight, and that does mean numbers, but is there a solution? What can we do about it? Is this perhaps something you have wrestled with? If it is, what worked for you? A lot of people say, cook healthy meals at home. Is that possible? Is there time to do that? Although I would argue there's always time for things we want to do. But we would like to hear from you. So you can give us a call at 1-888-416-8333. Perhaps you'd rather send us an email. You can do so. checkup@cbc.ca. Or you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Checkup CBC. And here's our website, cbc.ca/checkup. That's easy. cbc.ca/checkup. And you'll find lots of other information as well as a live online chat. Speaking of chatting, though, want to go back to the phones right now. In Whitby, Ontario, Barb Fannin, you've been very patient. I want to thank you for that. Barb, is there a solution you've got for the best way to tackle our weight problem as a nation?
I can tell you what our approach was. My sweetie and I had decided about 6 years ago that we would do a lifestyle change. For me, I'm about 5'2.5", and I was sitting at 200 pounds. And it was just time. It was just time to be healthier and to feel better.
What made you realize it was time? Because I'm always interested in when people say, okay, this is it. Here's the Rubicon.
Oh. Sue Ann, I went throughout most of my adult life of doing the diet thing.
Yeah.
Of taking the weight off, going back to eating the way I was before, because, you know, you hit that goal and you're going to go out and you're going to have a lavish meal to celebrate, right? Or at least that's the way that I would do it. And I wouldn't just gain back that what I'd lost. I'd gain back more. And it just kept piling on. And you just get to a point where, it's, yeah, this isn't working. Late in life, but this isn't working.
So what did work? What did work for you and your sweetie, I think you called him?
Okay, yes. So we didn't decide to diet. We decided what we called a lifestyle change. And that was a matter of a couple of things. One was processed food. We did not do processed food. We cut that out. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, there's some things that we brought back in because we did our own tomatoes 1 year, you know, froze them and not what.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much effort. And I'm telling you right now that we use canned crushed tomatoes when we're making tomato sauce.
Okay.
So some things slipped back in. And we introduced exercise. We both started walking.
I'm a big fan of walking.
Oh, it was one thing I knew I could do and I could keep up with.
Yeah.
You know? So, and we started walking.
How long before you found a difference in your weight, your attitude even, Barb? Because some people think it takes a long time, but go ahead, hit me with how long.
Okay, so within a matter of 3 weeks, I was down one size.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah, but it wasn't difficult because we didn't cut out anything that we weren't going to. I refused to give up butter. I refused to give up wine. If we wanted a glass of wine, we had a glass of wine. I refused that if we were going to have a drink that, you know, we would have a drink. And I would use ginger ale because I rather like wine, or pardon me, rye every now and again. And so I would have the ginger ale, not the diet stuff, because I don't like the taste.
Right. Barb, very quickly, got to go.
Yep, okay.
Okay. Have you got a final message as the country listens, Barb?
I'm just saying, you know, if you want this, think of a way that you can get what you want without giving up and that the things that you like. Everything in moderation. How's that?
That's it. My mom would say the same. Barb, thank you for calling in. That's Barb Fannin in Whitby, Ontario. Still in Ontario, but in Cortland, we've got Caitlin Edmonds. Caitlin, looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this question. The best way to tackle Canada's weight problem here on Cross Country Checkup.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So with what I've been listening to, and so just this week I had commented on the Weight Watchers issue right now in terms of getting a teen program for teens to join Weight Watchers.
Yeah, this is a plan just for our listeners who may just be joining us, Caitlin, for 13 to 17-year-olds who can join with an adult member this summer for free.
Right. So I believe that some of the comments that Weight Watchers has made over this controversy is that this is supposed to be tackling this obesity epidemic. And I agree that there's an obesity epidemic, but I don't think that that is their place to intervene. And I think it is the place of the doctors and the parents. I think that healthy eating and healthy lifestyle and avoiding obesity starts at home.
But I don't think this weight loss company is saying you have to join. I mean, everybody's got a choice.
Right,
so
right.
There's an option there that if you want to take this option, you can do it. So
right.
Shouldn't we have options of how we want to make our own choices?
Yes, I agree. Yes, we should. The problem that I personally have with this, personally as struggled with an eating disorder in my past, is that companies like Weight Watchers, although that they are currently promoting that they are about health and not weight and numbers, they still are about weight and numbers. People go in weekly to be weighed. They count points. And although that this may help people lose weight, it can drive this unhealthy relationship with numbers. And more on that is that your health isn't just determined by that one number, by
right.
weight. There's a lot of different there's a lot of different indicators of health other than weight. And like Dr. Tom was saying earlier, it's not always just about the weight that can determine if you're going to be able to live a healthy lifestyle.
Caitlin, let me ask you, apart from the numbers, doesn't matter to me what you weigh, but the thoughts that you're sharing with me, I sense they come from the heart. What was it that changed the way you looked at those numbers?
Well, so at first I was looking at them like this was something in my life that I can control in a time where everything felt under out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But then it started to come get to a point where it was taking over my entire life and I couldn't accomplish other things. So my view on these numbers changed as they were very restricting in the fact that that's all I cared about. And if I wanted to go on to accomplish all these other things in my life,
mm-hmm.
I need to just focus on my health and not worry about a number.
I wish you continued health, Caitlin, and thank you for sharing your story. Always Thanks. Takes a lot of courage, and you take care.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, Caitlin Edmonds in Cortland, Ontario. In Haida-Gai, one of our listeners is Rich Russ. He's Rich Russ Skidigate. Did I get that right, Rich?
Pretty close. Skidigate, Haida-Gai.
Skidigate, Haida-Gai. How are you?
Doing fine, thanks.
Good. We're talking about food and being obese and our relationship with food and the cost of eating healthy. Your thoughts on the subject of the day?
Oh, I think it's what everyone else was saying was fine and dandy, but what you got to talk about is the foundations. When people are growing up in the lifestyles that they have and the lifestyle choices that their parents provide them. In my generation, I was born in 1971, in my generation, and I can only speak for the males, but we all had hockey sticks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we played street hockey with those plastic blade hockey sticks, and as soon as we got home off the bus, we dropped our bags, grabbed a snack, and in my community, an after-school snack was dried salmon and dried herring eggs and a jug of water, and we ran up to where the tar mat was, and we'd play street hockey until we were too cold or too hot.
And here we are in 2018, and you don't have to grab the plastic stick or the wooden stick or the fiberglass stick. You just have to grab your computer device and a bag of Cheezies and go sit on the couch.
Well, therein lies the problem,
yeah.
Right? Yes. But back when I was growing up, Atari just came out and ColecoVision and all these old dinosaur video games, and only the spoiled kids had them, and we'd all line up to play, but everybody owned a hockey stick. Everybody sweated after school. And now I see parents and they're spoiling their kids. They buy the NHL 2017 and then the kids are whining for the 2018. And
Rich, let me ask you this though, sir. We're not going to give up our virtual world, if you will, or our access to all of those toys. That would be pie in the sky to say, let's make a big pile and burn all our devices.
Well, nobody's saying that.
So what?
You know, I choose my words very carefully.
Yeah.
I never said that.
No, I know. I'm saying that.
My suggestion would be to that everything be in moderation.
Yes.
Restrict the amount of time that your kid spends on the computer.
Yep.
Restrict and in front of the TV. Make certain times. I raised kids. My boy, he got chased out on a nice day. He wasn't allowed to lay around and watch TV. And he had chores to do, like I did when I was growing up.
Yeah.
There was a wood pile in my backyard I had to chop through.
Rich, you know what? I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to say, it's a nice day, you should be outside, go and do something outside. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And, I appreciate
it. It can't be just a suggestion anymore. You know what I mean?
It's got to be an
order,
huh?
You can't just suggest it to your kids. You've got to make them do that sort of stuff.
Rich, I want to thank you for taking the time to call in, and I appreciate it. You take care. We want to continue on. You're listening to Cross Country Checkup, and our question is, what's the best way to tackle Canada's weight problem?
Yeah, my main issue was weight. And when I look at pictures, I'm like, how come no one told me? You know, like, what the hell?
What did I cheat? Well, it's mostly potatoes.
Lasagna, spaghetti.
Popcorn.
Smothered with margarine.
I'm trying to think, did I just gain 10 pounds because I did this?
I think we all were too scared to tell each other how big we were getting.
CBC documentary called My Big Fat Diet. It focused on the work of my next guest. Dr. Jay Wortman is from the Métis community of Fort Vermilion, Alberta. He has worked in First Nations and Inuit health for many years. He studied the problem of obesity and diabetes. And we've reached Dr. Wortman in West Vancouver. Hello to you, doctor.
Hello.
Want to hear definitely about My Big Fat Diet, but I do want to hear your studies and relations between obesity and diabetes, and further to that, in specifically the Indigenous population. What have you discovered?
Well, I got really interested in this about 15 and a half years ago when I developed type 2 diabetes. And I'm a Métis background, and it's rampant in my family, my Métis relatives. And when I developed it, I just literally stumbled into a low-carb approach. I stopped eating carbs because I knew they raised my blood sugar, and I instantly felt better. All my blood markers went back to normal. I lost weight at about the rate of about a pound a day for a month. And 15 and a half years later, I've maintained that diet. I very, very, very low-carb diet.
I'm still jaw-dropped on the fact that you lost a pound a day.
It literally fell off me. I in those days, I worked in an office where I wore a suit to the office.
Yep.
I had to take in all my pants after a couple weeks, and then 2 weeks later, they were falling off me again. It was just remarkable.
So why did it take you so long, Dr. Wortman? You're a doctor. You're supposed to know better than me. Why did it take you so long to tackle this instead of waiting till you got diabetes?
Well, yeah. I guess I wasn't such a good doctor because it really sneaked up on me, you know. And I was working in a high-stress environment. I was traveling a lot. I wasn't really taking care of my own health.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I suddenly realized, hey, I've got all the symptoms of a florid case of diabetes. And, of course, when I checked, my sugars were through the roof.
Yeah.
But what the main thing here is that, I stumbled onto this idea of cutting carbs, and then I started to connect the dots that in First Nations populations,
yep,
not too many generations ago, they were eating their traditional diets, which were very low in carbs.
And high in protein.
Well, fat.
Fat.
When you don't burn carbs, you primarily burn fat. Protein's not really meant to be a fuel. It's meant to be a building block.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not eating carbs, you should be burning fat. And I became very interested in the traditional diets across the country. And every place you go, there was a central fat in the traditional diet.
What led to the loss of that traditional diet in our Indigenous population?
Oh, that's a multifaceted.
Is it cold meats? Is it cold cuts? You know, is it processed food?
Well, if you go into the grocery stores in any of these little First Nations or Inuit communities, the central aisles are just jammed with all kinds of sugary and highly processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been this tragic shift in diet away from what was a very healthy, sustaining traditional diet in all these communities to something that's really very detrimental to health now.
Well, one of the things, you tell me about it, My Big Fat Diet. What was the one thing that you want us to take away from that?
Well, what we did there was, this was in Alert Bay, a little community in British Columbia. We went to this community and said, you know, we think change from traditional diet is driving all these problems, so why don't you go back to your traditional diet or a diet that mimics it with macronutrients, a low-carb diet. And we put people on that diet. The study design had them follow it for about 12 months, and we got very good results. You know, people lost a lot of weight. The diabetics improved their markers, got off their medications. People felt better. It had a tremendous benefit.
Have you gone back?
I haven't. I've only been back a couple of times in the years since that study was done. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get... I changed. I used to work for Health Canada, which took me into these communities more, and I don't anymore, so no.
So one of the things we've been hearing from some of our callers, Doctor, is, you know, the yo-yo kind of dieting. I lose weight, yeah. I gain weight. When you do change a lifestyle like this, when you go away from the processed foods as a lifestyle change to the more traditional indigenous foods, is that really what feeds, if you will, the longevity of your health and your weight loss?
In my personal case, I felt so much better, and I could see the improvements in my health, which motivated me to stay compliant. I know a lot of people self-medicate with these harmful foods, so there's emotional eating, there's other layers of things going on. But from a metabolic and from a weight maintenance point of view, I think the science is pretty clear. There's just so many studies in the literature now supporting this kind of a diet for those things.
One of the things that helps to support a diet is your bank account, right?
Ah, okay.
Is it expensive to eat well? Because if you've gone to communities up north in some of the grocery stores and you eat or traditional First Nations community grocery stores, is it just really expensive to buy, you know, tomatoes on the vine or something or apples or whatever
it may be? Why would you eat those foods?
Because they're fresh and I like them both.
How many tomatoes and apples did the Inuit eat before there was air travel and barges of food going north?
What's the answer?
None. These traditional diets weren't loaded with foods like that. And the fact is you don't really need them. There are the important foods, the most nutrient-rich foods are animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to speak to the cost thing, because when we did the study in Alert Bay, that was one of the initial questions people had is, how can I afford this diet of steak and lobster, right?
Yep.
And the Band Council, well, first of all, it's not like that, but the Band Council said, okay, anybody who's having difficulty paying for the food will give you support, financial support. And throughout the whole study, nobody ever went to ask for financial support. And this is how I look at it. We tend to think of these diets as high protein, when in fact they're not. They're high fat diets,
mm-hmm.
burning fat instead of carbs. If you calculate the cost of a calorie for olive oil, it's half the cost of calorie for, say, Cheerio breakfast cereal.
Okay.
So for $2, I can get my entire day's calories in olive oil. Now, you wouldn't do that.
No.
But it just kind of puts it in perspective for you. Now, I do lots of cooking. I like to cook. And one part of the fun of doing this diet was learning how to cook all kinds of different foods. I make a huge batch of chili once every couple of months, and I freeze individual portions. And when I cost it out, I have a delicious meal for less than $2.
Yeah, I do the same. I love it when I make chili. Hey, I do want to ask you about when you were a kid, you know, and your habits changed as a grown-up, but there's a great story you tell about the smells and the food you used to eat. Leave us with that, because this is about food, and we can't give it up, but we should learn to love our relationship again.
We should love our food.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason you shouldn't, and you can do that and still avoid all the, you know, really unhealthy stuff. Now, I just want to mention my chili is beanless chili, by the way.
Ew. Kidding.
It's really good. You'd be surprised. But the question you're asking, I think, is the story I tell about my grandmother's house when I was a very young child living in the very far north.
Yeah, let me smell those smells.
Yeah, the far north of Alberta. My grandmother lived in a log house, and she heated it with her wood stove, and she baked bread and pastries and things on that stove. And as a little child, the whole house would fill up with these wonderful smells. But I also... My grandmother, she lived on the banks of the Peace River, and there were trapping going on. In fact, my grandfather was a trapper. And trappers would go out in the fall and come back in the spring. And her house was next to the fur trading store. And so the trappers would stop in and have tea with Grandma and catch up on the news, because she knew everybody's business. And I remember being a little child getting underfoot when they were trying to have an adult conversation, and the trapper reached into his backpack and he pulled out a piece of dried smoked moose meat, which mm-hmm. kept me busy for the next hour in the corner of the room chewing on it. And I remember that so vividly because when I look back on it now, I realize how diet was changing back then. And my grandmother did succumb to type 2 diabetes. It was a serious disease in our family, yeah.
Listen, you've left me with some great smells, and I bet you you've never found dried meat that tastes quite like that.
There's no jerky that's as good as that.
I want to thank you for your time, Doctor. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Dr. Jay Wortman has worked in First Nations and Inuit health for many years. He's a practicing physician in West Vancouver. And we have put a link on our website to Dr. Wortman's blog, which has recipes and it has wonderful stories and other ideas as well about keeping healthy. So I'm going to urge you to check that out. You are listening to Cross Country Checkup. I'm Suhanna Marchand. Great pleasure to fill in for Duncan McHugh. We're talking about why it is we are piling on the pounds and perhaps what your experience has been of trying to get back to a healthy weight, whatever that might be for you. Maybe you're from a community where it's difficult to get your hands on affordable, healthy food. We've heard not always the case, but give us a call at 1-888-416-8333. If you'd prefer to send us an email, you can do so. checkup@cbc.ca. Now, we do have tweets from some of our listeners, and let me share a few of those because I don't want to leave you out of this conversation. John H. Vino from Springfield, Nova Scotia, wrote this on Facebook. Increase disability and pensions so people can buy healthy food and can also afford to be active. Thanks for that comment, John. Catherine from Regina tweeted us about the Weight Watchers program for teens. So that weight loss program is offering a free membership for teens 13 to 17 if there is a grown-up that joins with them. But this is what Catherine tweets. If the child is overweight for his or her height, yes, children these days sit and play computer games. They're not as active anymore. Natrice Reese from Timmins, Ontario, tweeted this as well on the same topic of the Weight Watchers program. Personally, I wish there had been some kind of program available for education support and positive reinforcement. Turned from skinny to overweight in the snap of a finger without a clue how to fix it. Take care of the teens. And Nancy Rector from Ontario tweets this. And I don't know about you, but I remember taking a home ec class when I was in high school. So that tells you how old I am because there was no shop available for the girls back then, which anyway, we could digress forever on that. So let's not. Nancy Rector from Ontario tweets this. Bring back cooking class to school. People eat fast food as there is no time for homemade meals and they don't know how to eat healthy anymore. Nancy, I'm with you on that. I got to learn how to cook better too. If you want to participate online, there is an online chat at cbc.ca/checkup. Or as I mentioned, you can send us an email to checkup@cbc.ca. If you want to find us on Twitter and Facebook, search for Checkup CBC. And I'll continue to read some of the excerpts from social media on our program because you are part of our program as well. Back to the phones, though, right now. Our number is 1-888-416-8333. So I'd love to hear from you. The question is, what's the best way to tackle Canada's weight problem? Violet joins me from Summerland in BC. Hello to you, Violet. It's Suhanna.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. How about you?
I'm doing very well. I'm talking to people across the country, and you're one of them, Violet, and very happy to do so, about weight. We know that Canadians are getting bigger and bigger. What is your point to the call today? What would you like to tell me about people, Canadians, getting heavier?
Part of it is that the lunch food at schools are pretty unhealthy sometimes. And one of the lunch foods is pizza, and maybe they should change the pizza to, like, salads. That's a little bit healthier for kids.
What grade are you in, Violet?
I'm in grade 6.
And how much input do you have into what you take for lunch when you take your lunch to school?
I like packing healthy stuff for my lunch.
What do you pack? Like, on Monday, what will you have in your lunch pail, your lunch bag?
Fruits and vegetables and like salads.
And you get time to eat all that? You love it when you're out at lunch break?
Yes, it's really good.
Let me ask you this. Is it just easier sometimes when you see the kids eating pizza or whatever, a processed meat sandwich, and you think, gosh, I want one of those instead?
Yeah, sometimes. But then you just have to tell yourself that it's going to be better if you just eat your vegetables and stuff, because it might not taste as good, but then you know when you're older, you're going to be a lot healthier.
You know what? You sound like a great kid. I want to ask you this as well, Violet, while I have you. You eat well. You eat your fruits and your veggies. You take your lunch to school. What about being active? Some callers have said that kids today, you know, they play on their devices and they don't go outside. Mm-hmm. Like when I was a kid, my mom used to say, you know, get out there. It's a nice day. How much of your day do you think is like that? Being outside, getting active?
Well, I really like being outside, and I think it's really nice to be outside, but yeah, it's just really fun being outside, so I think most of the day I'm outside.
Instead of playing on whatever device you might have?
Yeah.
So would you say you're outside more than you are on your device?
Pretty much.
Okay, final question for you, Velvet. What do you say to other kids who are listening to Cross Country Checkup who might be saying, yeah, but it's so much fun playing computer games? What's your advice, Violet?
Maybe you can play with your friends, and then maybe you can have more fun with your friends, and then you can maybe like make some new friends, and you'll have more friends to play with.
Violet, you sound fantastic. Your mom and dad must be very proud of you, and I'm really glad that you took the time to call in to Cross Country Checkup and to say, get out there and play with your friends. Make some new ones. You take care, Violet. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
Violet from Summerland in BC. She's in grade 6, and you know what? Sometimes we learn from, I don't know, all different walks of life, and Violet says, get out there. Make new friends. Go and play with them. And maybe as adults, we should take some of that advice. Anastasia Payne is in Halifax, and she's been very patient on the phone. Anastasia, let me ask you what your advice is on, you know, as we talk about Canadians being overweight, perhaps even obese in many cases.
Hi. I think that everybody you've had on has had some really great points. Really, I think it's a whole culture, you know, it's not just the food. We live these like sedentary lives. You come home, you grab something cheap and quick on your way home from your minimum wage job, and then you sit on the couch for 6 hours before bed. So
what
I think that there needs, sorry.
Whose responsibility is that though? Is that your responsibility to get up off your butt and go do something, as Violet said, go out, make new friends, play with your friends? Or is it up to, I don't know, is it up to the government? You tell me.
You know, I think that absolutely it's your responsibility. Everybody is responsible for themselves. I just think that there needs to be maybe a little bit more. It could be a combined effort. You know, there needs to be more labeling on foods, and people need to be encouraged to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know when I go to the store and I pick up a box, there's just so many different names for sugar. You know, you just don't know sometimes what's in it.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I'm one of those label readers too. But let me, I wonder, do you think labeling and bigger font, whatever it may be, this has so much fat, this has so many calories, this has so much sugar, whatever it may be, will that make a difference to people who are going about their day and they've finished work, it's now 5 o'clock, they're going to pick up something for dinner, are they going to stop and read the label?
You know, I'd like to think so, but, you know, the reality is a lot of people probably won't, or they will, and it's just not going to be that big of a deal, because we live in a culture now where, and by no means do I want to say that the body positivity movement hasn't done some great things. Everybody should be okay with the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of weight, you know, I think there comes a point when it's just, it's too far and it's not healthy.
What is your relationship with food, Anastasia? How do you have a positive, good relationship with food? I'm looking for advice here for people who perhaps are, you know, wondering what they need to do.
So I was very lucky. I grew up on a farm. So I grew up eating a lot of healthy foods, and I think that's influenced the way I think about food now. Absolutely. You know, I'm a student, so it's easy for me to get convenient, cheap food. And it's a struggle, you know. there will be times when I just absolutely don't want to cook. I go through phases. So it's tough to eat healthy. It is.
You know what? One of the doctors, one of the people we were talking with said, keep that stuff on hand. Right, keep the fruits, keep the veggies, keep the things you like on hand, and that way you reach for the right things. Anastasia, I want to thank you for taking the time to call us here on Cross Country Checkup.
Thank you.
1-888-416-8333 is our phone number. We're talking about the best way to tackle Canada's weight problem. We do know we have an obesity issue in Canada. 7 out of more than 30 countries that have been facing this problem. United States higher than us. That probably doesn't surprise you at number 1, but Canada is at number 7. We are piling on the pounds, and we're looking for your thoughts on what we need to do about it. We do know there was a study 2 years ago. There is a report put out by the Standing Committee in the Senate. Not all of those recommendations have been taken into account yet by the government. So we're talking, one of the things we had talked about is advertising for aimed at children. What should be done about that? What about buying healthy food? Should it be cheaper to buy healthier food so that we don't have to make some of these bad choices? Let me go to Nicole Cameron in Fernie, BC. Nicole, what are your thoughts?
Hi. Wanted to make a comment about activity.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a weight problem for most of my life, but when I didn't have a problem is when I was younger, and that's because I played outside.
Yes.
I played outside, and it was easier to play outside, but now it's not safe to send your children outside.
What do you mean it's not safe? For them to play in your front yard or your backyard?
Children into activity programs, but they cost a fortune.
Yeah.
And so I'm finding, from my experience, kids are less active. They're more on their devices, not because they don't want to be active, but it's not safe for them to play outside, and the parents can't afford to put them into activities.
Nicole,
so I would like to see some government support where they are covering some activities for low-income families.
There was some money for participation in the budget, but how could the government funding to parents like yourselves, help in getting our young people active? I mean, people have to want to take advantage of that. And what should the government be espousing?
To be clear, I'm not a parent, but most of my friends are.
Okay.
But I would like to see some after-school programming, because I know a lot of kids go into after-school programming, but some after-school programming that's funded and subsidized that covers activity, that teaches kids about healthy eating. You know, that isn't kids going and just doing, arts and crafts and all those kind of things are important too, but let's get them out and active when they're going to these after-school activities that they're doing anyway.
As an adult today, Nicole, with the idea, you know, that you grew up with, and I did as well, being outside playing, how is your activity level as an adult today?
My activity level as an adult today, I can tell you, is not great. I wish it was better. I mean, I, as an adult, I'm responsible. I can go out for a walk, but it still costs me a fortune to join any activities as well. To go skiing, skiing is $100 a day if you want to go at most hills, and to join a curling club, to join all of these things, it costs a lot. And yes, I can go for a walk, but it's still very, very expensive to get out there and get active.
Nicole, thank you for your comments. I think they're valid, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Nicole Cameron in Fernie, BC. My next guest has done a lot of thinking about how the environment we live in affects our health and our struggle with weight. Sarah Kirk is Canada Research Chair in Health Services Research at Dalhousie University's School of Health and Human Performance, and we have reached her in Halifax. Sarah, your card, boy, that's quite the title. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And in fact, I'm actually not a Canada Research Chair anymore. That ended about a year ago, but I'm a Professor of Health Promotion at Dalhousie. And this is an area that I'm feeling very passionate about. And I've been following the conversation, which has been really, really interesting. I think the key thing for me that this is a complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what we eat, what we do or don't do, how we build our communities. It's about the role of technology. It's the role of economics. It's the role of politics. Unfortunately, we often want to find that simple solution. So it's appealing to think if it's just one thing alone that's going to fix the problem. Let's bring back cooking in school. Let's go to the gym. Really, it's all of those things and more. And in fact, I think the person who said it best so far is grade six Violet, who was actually talking, calling out that irony of teaching kids about health in schools, and then we serve them unhealthy food, then we take away their physical activity time. We make it very difficult for them. You know, we focus on making them sit for hours on end when they're at school. And these are all the sorts of things that I look at in my research.
You know, that I hate to bring up a food or eating expression, but the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time, right?
Mm-hmm,
so which bites should we be taking out of this elephant, this complex issue of obesity in Canada? Which bites need we take first?
So I think the problem is that there's more than one bite that needs to be taken, and there's a lot of people who need to be doing the eating, actually, of that element. So this is really, I think, where everybody has a role to play. And I think this has come through, certainly Senator Eggleton was talking earlier around this whole of society approach. And that's really what we're looking at here. You know, individuals have a role to play. Of course we do. Governments have a role to play. Municipalities have a role to play. The food industry has a role to play. So I think all of us have to start recognizing the combined effect of all those roles that we have is what's going to be needed to address this. And I think we also need to be recognizing that this is not just about obesity. And you mentioned earlier about not having heard the expression obesogenic environment before. Mm-hmm. I used to use that expression a lot in my research, but now I've actually changed it to a health disrupting environment, because this affects all of us regardless of our weight. And I think the other thing that we need to be aware of is that, you know, none of us are actually achieving our potential in terms of our health, because we're all sitting too much. We're all being, you know, not being physically active enough. We're all over consuming because that's the environment that we've created around ourselves. And actually, the thing that kind of, you know, surprises me more than anything is, why are we still asking why it's a problem? Because of course it is. If you wanted to create an environment that made people gain weight, you would do exactly what we've done.
And yet we're not stupid. We know the right answers. I know that it would be better for me to eat something from the garden rather than the bag of chips. I know it would be better for me to go out for a walk around the block than sit down and watch something on Netflix or Crave or whatever it is. So we know this stuff. So maybe,
totally know
maybe
this,
we're just dumb.
Yeah. No, not at all. And I think this is the thing. We often sort of look at education. You know, we just need to educate our way out of this problem. But that is one thing that is important. You know, we do need to certainly have more food literacy. We do need to have people recognize the tremendous benefits of physical activity. But we also need to recognize that our environment has been constructed in a way that actually makes all these things very difficult. So if you're trying to do this as an individual, it literally is like pushing a boulder uphill. Healthy behavior is abnormal behavior. You know, think about that and think about all the things that you said. Yes, I know that, but, you know, we don't do it. Why? Because it's really hard to do those things. It's really hard to do those things when we've designed our cities for cars. That makes it very, very hard to do, you know, to walk or cycle. It makes it, you know, it makes it less safe for children to play outside in the road and play that game of street hockey in the road because they're concerned about a car coming hurtling around the corner. And all those sort of things, those is a cumulative effect of all these decisions that are made, and often those decisions are made without any thought for health. So, you know, I'm from the UK originally, you can probably tell from my accent, and I used to get really frustrated when people used to park cars on sidewalks, which is what people in the UK do because there's not enough room to park them on the road, so they park them on the sidewalk. And then I moved to a street where we didn't even have a sidewalk. Why don't we have a sidewalk? Well, because it's, you know, something to do with snow clearance. You know, it costs money to clear a sidewalk, so let's just not have one. What's the impact of that? Well, you know, somebody made a decision to put, you know, to not put a sidewalk in. That had consequences, had unintended consequences in terms of people feeling less able to walk. So we need to think about all these complex, this complex constellation of factors that have actually made healthy behavior the harder behavior to adopt.
Wow. You know, you make me think, because I know there are streets around my neighborhood where there are no sidewalks it's something as small as that. Do weight loss programs have a role? That's one of the things we're also talking about, is this impetus by one weight loss company in specifically to bring in teenagers. I mean, learning about weight loss, you've talked about activity, et cetera. How important is that from 13 to 17 and go somewhere where they've done the science, if you will?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is a really quite a complex and a controversial issue, because if our children had the opportunity to be active and to eat healthy in their daily lives, would we really need to be talking to them about weight? And I think the conversation should be less about weight and more about health. What is healthy for people who have a weight issue is healthy for people who don't. So let's start to shift the conversation away from focusing on, you know, helping kids to lose weight, and instead recognize that there are many other things that we can do to make it easier for children to learn these things at school, and to model them in their environment. So make it easier for kids to play outside. You know, there's so many benefits from that. There's concern, and rightly so, and research that's been done. I have one of my colleagues here at Dalhousie actually who has been researching the problems of, you know, essentially what's been coined nature deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. Our kids aren't getting outside. They're not getting exposed to the natural environment. You know, we already know that there are, you know, climate change is a real threat. And if our kids don't care about, you know, the natural environment or the outside environment, they're going to be less likely to fight for it. So this is not just even about health. This is about sustainability. It's about, you know, all these other things as well. So, you know, it can be somewhat mind-blowing, you know, to think of the complexity of these things. And I totally agree with you when you sort of use that elephant analogy. Let's take some bite-sized pieces, but let's all do it and think about these things in every aspect of our life.
Professor Kirk, I'm just going to jump in so you can breathe. We have a caller. You're fantastic. You have so much information. I'm writing stuff down and my arm is sore. We have Patty Davidson on the line from Charlottetown PEI. Let me just confirm. Patty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. And Patty, I'm going to connect you with Professor Kirk from Dalhousie University. She has incredible insight into this topic. And what is it, Patty, that you would like to hear suggestions about?
Well, first of all, Professor Kirk, I couldn't agree. I'm doing the same thing. I'm writing things down. I couldn't agree with more with what you're saying. It's fantastic. My question is, have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I'm very fortunate enough to be, my partner's a dietitian. So our focus at home is around health and encouraging healthy activity and lifestyle. And I think we can always do better, of course, but I think right now we do a pretty good job when they're little of, you know, we're out on the backyard rink with them. We're on the trampoline in the summer. We're playing catch. Because they sustain their activity longer as well.
And what's your question, Patty?
So my question is, as they move into adolescence, my worry is that peer pressure around the fact that we limit screen time at home. But as they get older, I'd love to hear some suggestions of how, you know, we feel like we've put the foundation, but how do I continue to encourage that when they can go down the street and play on their friend's Xbox for 4 hours? You know, that makes my hair stand up on my head to think about. So what do I do in that situation?
It's a great question, Patty, and I'll turn you off now and go back to Professor Kirk. Thoughts, Professor?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say that you're doing all the right things there. You're modeling the behaviors you want your child to adopt. You're going outside and playing with your child, which again is really, really important. You're setting them setting those habits at an early age. It is very challenging when kids get up to the teenage years because, you know, peer pressure does play a huge role. Again, I would say that we need to be making it so that all of our children have access to healthy behaviors. And then that becomes the norm for them as well. So at the moment, it's much easier for kids to sort of do those things. But even if kids do go off the rails a little bit in their teenage years, still so important to set those behaviors early on in life, because they will come back to that as they themselves grow up and recognize the value of that. So, yeah, I think there's all these sort of things that are very, very challenging to deal with. And I have two teenagers at home as well, so I can relate.
Absolutely, and so can I. I want to leave with one question, and I know I've taken up a lot of your time, Professor Kirk. But
no problem.
One of the things that has come up in our conversations and with Senator Eggleton as well is the cost of eating healthy food. Now, I know that you grow and you sell some fresh produce yourself, so you're in that small, very fortunate sort of piece of our society where you can do that. But how does one, we've talked about politics, et cetera, how does one bring economics into eating healthy and make it reasonable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I mean, again, there's been a lot of discussion about this on Twitter as well around the cost of healthy food. And yes, you know, there are some very healthy things that we can have, lentils, beans, those kind of things. But that does make an assumption that people know what to do with them, that they know that they have the resources to, you know, a pot, a pan, and a stove even. And we know that's not necessarily the case for everybody. So I think we need to be sort of recognizing that there is going to have to be some form of government intervention at that point. So, you know, I think we all kind of cringe when we think about things like tax, you know, soda taxes and things like that. But what we know from the international research is that those taxes are working, and they would work so much better if the money that was raised from them was then actually invested into health promoting activities and making it easier for people to adopt those behaviors all the time. So I think we have to keep remembering that as well, that it's, you know, for some people, it simply is not affordable to eat healthy food, and we need to be looking at why that is and changing that
and making the healthy
making it
eating
easier.
Equity. I like that term.
Indeed. And, yeah. And healthy eating, you know, healthy behaviors need to be the easier
exactly
choice.
I want to thank you for your time, Professor Kirk. I really appreciate it, and for taking questions as well from our callers, including Patty.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Professor Sarah Kirk from Dalhousie University School of Health and Human Performance, and we reached her in Halifax. You are listening to Cross Country Checkup. I have the incredible pleasure of filling in for Duncan McHugh today. Duncan, by the way, will be back next weekend, so make sure you tune in, because your favorite and my favorite, he'll be back in the chair. But we are talking about why, as a nation, we are piling on the pounds and how we can best shift those pounds. Maybe shift is not the right word. I just don't want to shift some of my weight around. I'd like to drop some of it. But that is costing us dearly, both in our pockets and in our health. We are a wealthy, educated country. So why are we failing to take heed of the messages that people like Dr. Warshawski, people like Professor Sarah Kirk, the health professionals, the advice they're giving us? Why are we failing to take heed? You can give us a call at 1-888-416-8333, because I'd love to talk to you about it. I know there are so many different arms of this conversation we can have, but we're trying to stick on what we can do about this obesity issue in Canada, obesity problem. Our email is checkup@cbc.ca. Buck Miller is standing by in Huntsville, Ontario, and I'm glad to go back to the phones. Buck, your thoughts on this question we're asking today about what is the best way to tackle Canada's weight problem?
Yeah, hi. I'm just coming back from ice fishing with my daughter, 3-year-old daughter. She's in the car with me right now.
Did you catch anything?
You know what? Today we got skunked, unfortunately. We were fishing for speckled trout, but it didn't work out. But anyway.
Okay.
So we get to this. I drive out of town, you know, not too far. Drive out. I park. And I start walking in this trail to this lake that I've been to a few times. And I get there. It's only 400 yards. And there's a skidoo there and a Suburban parked out at the road.
Yeah.
This guy drove into the lake, you know, bought his trailer, his Suburban, loaded up a skidoo to drive it out to the lakeside park and ride the skidoo 400 yards on a pretty easy walking trail while I'm towing my daughter in a toboggan. I'm just pulling her in. I got a hand chisel that holds the ice out. Takes, you know, 4 minutes to get a hole in 10 inches of ice with this chisel I've got.
Yeah.
And,
so this,
you know, he's
this
blown
picture,
away.
This picture you're painting, Buck, is really the problem in a nutshell, isn't it?
Especially in rural Canada, like for some reason, the further north you go, the more crazy you're looked at if you do anything under human power. I lived in remote northern Ontario for quite a while. I lived in Moose Knee. My daughter was born in Moose Factory. I love those communities; they're amazing. When I first moved there, I'm a cyclist. I got asked. I would ride my bike all over town. Many times I've been asked if I lost my license for drinking and driving.
Because that was the assumption, that you were not
right,
biking because you wanted to be out there pedaling,
right,
with pedal power.
Yeah, like I lived in those communities. You can't live far from work. So I figured, why drive a car? So I would ride my bike to work 800 meters. And yeah, I've been stopped numerous times. This isn't just a one-off.
Hey,
numerous
Buck,
times
what's...
by locals, by people I knew, asking if I got busted for drinking and driving on the weekend.
You know, I'm smiling, but in a sad, pathetic kind of way.
That's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
You know, and my family is part to blame in a way. Like, like some of my family is also, you know, connected to the snow machine and the four wheeler as if they cannot be disconnected from it no matter what.
They can't think
of anything to do. When they think of the outdoors, it has to bring gas. Otherwise, it's not really in the outdoors.
Yeah, you know, it makes us quite dependent, doesn't it? But Buck, I certainly hope your 3-year-old, and what's her name, by the way?
Her name's Eleanor.
Eleanor, hello to you. Your daddy was great in walking you out for that ice fishing. Buck, I hope she learns great lessons from you about activity and about that, you know, healthy eating. I want to thank you for your time.
I'm trying to spread the good word.
Good. Good for you, Buck Miller. If you see him out on the bike, don't ask him if he lost his license. Buck chooses to be out there using his feet on his bike. Mark Kupal is standing by in Montreal. I want to talk to you, Mark. How are you?
Not bad. You?
I'm well. As you talk to Canadians across the country, what's your advice as we look at weight problems?
I work in the meat department at Intermarché La Gloria in St. Leonard, which is just a little district in Montreal here.
Yeah.
And I see exactly what you're talking about. I see people, first of all, eat too much red meat. I'll tell you that much. I mean, I get the same faces that come in there almost every day or every 2 days, and they're stocking up on red meat. And you get the ones that come in, they buy the junk food, the chips, the chip dip, the sausages full of salt and fat.
Yeah.
And they're in the frozen department, the pizzas, the hash browns, the French fries, you know, the sauce. I mean, this, that, the other thing. You know, and I got a lot of overweight clients that walk in there. There's two guys that are there. They're in there every month. I mean, the first of the month for some reason. And holy Toledo, man. I mean,
but you know what? The weird thing is, Mark, I mean, you're watching people buy this stuff. You talk about the sausages filled with yada yada and the chips, et cetera. Yeah. But you can't say anything, right?
No. You can't say nothing. But, they're buying ice cream. And these two guys, they're really overweight. I mean, these guys must weigh about 300 pounds each. And the ice cream and the chips and this. And they're in the deli. They're buying the cold meats. I mean, it's all.
So, what's your advice?
Fat.
You sound like you're pretty in tune with your good foods.
Well, I mean, I cook my own food. I haven't been to a McDonald's, like I told your producer, in about 6 years, and I couldn't care less about McDonald's.
Right.
And I'll order a pizza, like I told her, every now and then. I mean, I'll drink Coca-Cola every now and then, but I drink orange juice, grape juice. I cook my own stuff. I cook chicken. I cook beef. I eat cheese.
And let me ask you this, Mark. I mean, obviously, you work somewhere where you have you can go grocery shopping every day if you want to. But cooking your own food, that is a healthy choice, and many would say a life choice that you make.
Yeah.
How important is that, do you think, in your health and your weight, the fact that you cook your own food?
I'll tell you what. I'll be honest with you. When I eat a pizza or whatever, I mean, the next day, I feel like listless. I feel like weighed down. I don't know if something is wrong there. You know, a lot of grease in there. You know what I mean? You look at the box, the bottom of the box, it's saturated with grease, man. I mean, the pepperonis or whatever. No, I watch out. I eat my chicken. I eat my I eat fish. I eat a lot of salmon. I mean, and I get everything at practically nothing. With my boss, I mean, there's three partners in that story. You know, the three. Partners, and they own the store, and they're great people. And let's say, as an example,
very quickly, Mark,
for a rib steak per kilo or whatever, I get it for like $8.80 a kilo.
Okay, so you're getting a good deal too, and you're able to cook it at home. And Mark, you know what?
I hope a lot of people
were listening and take some of that advice to cook their own food. Thank you for your time.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
That was Mark Kupal in Montreal, and he gets some good deals on some of the food that he cooks. But the bottom line for Mark is that he cooks his food at home. Rob Bignall is in Mississauga, Ontario. Hello to you, Rob. It's Suhanna.
Hello, Suhanna. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Loving some of the conversation we're having today about food, our relationship with it, what makes us overweight. Your thoughts?
Well, I've been a teacher for 27 years. I've taught health and physical education to kindergarten to grade 8 for a number of those years. And just tying in the whole societal changes that have happened over the years, including the years that I've attended school as a student.
What have you noticed as a teacher?
Well, the whole idea of packing snacks. I mean, some of the kids are packing buffets, smorgasbords for snack. And you know, there's pressure put on parents from the children as to what snacks they prefer. And you know, with both parents
you know, rushing around trying to satisfy the needs and making sure that their children are, you know, well fed during the day for, you know.
Yeah. So this is a competition. You know, what did my parents send me for snack? You know, it was either an apple.
Did you get a snack, Savannah?
Did I get a snack? No, and I had to walk up ways, uphill both ways to get to school over broken glass. No,
exactly.
But when you see...
Or you took an apple.
That's right, or you took an apple. But when you see these kids opening up these, as you call them, buffet snacks, what story does that tell you?
Well, from my point of view, in that my children are now, you know, adults,
yep.
I feel saddened because of the amount of waste. That's my biggest concern. The amount of waste that a kid opens up an applesauce container, takes two spoonfuls, and then says, "Yeah, I'm done." And that's not just the only thing that they brought for lunch. The waste is incredible.
Yes.
But that's another radio, another session for your radio call-in show. But as far as seeing the types of foods, I mean, we've tried as teachers, as schools to, you know, encourage healthy snacks. But as far as the amount of snacks, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think somewhere along the line, the research saying that, you know, well-fed kids are learning better has been taken to another extreme as far as, you know, making sure that maybe that research just meant, you know, a couple apple slices. That's
right.
All they need for the morning.
Exactly.
Until lunch hour, where they're going to get their lunch out or their lunch and perhaps eat their whole lunch.
Rob, I want to thank you for your insight on this. As a teacher, you probably see all kinds of stuff in that
Absolutely.
Snack bag. And I have to tell you that I have very fond memories of my phys ed teacher, who was always really great. So I have a soft spot in my heart for all teachers. Thank you, Rob. Andrew Inglis is standing by in Kamloops, BC. And Andrew, we're talking about food, our relationship with it, and why Canadians are becoming more and more obese. Your thoughts?
Well, for me, it was a matter of convenience. I changed my diet, lost 30 pounds. I'm feeling great. But I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and mm-hmm. And it was to run in and grab the burger and get on the road and go, go, go. Where it's a little more planning now, where I stop and stop at a grocery store and load up with more fresh foods and even cook at home or cook in the truck. I make a lot more of my own food. The restaurant,
what led you to that decision, though, Andrew? Because
this is great. So my wife came with me this summer. She was on a diet. She decided that she'd had enough of sitting on the couch and eating the way she was. And said she came with me and said, "You're going to have to follow my diet when I'm on the road, or at least respect what I'm going to eat." And I said, "Sure." So the first we were out for 2 weeks, and I lost 8 pounds.
Yep.
And out for two more weeks, I lost another 7. So I passed her in the weight loss.
Oh, I bet she was happy with that, huh?
Oh, it was. She goes, "Man, I can't believe it." But it is. It's a matter of choices, and I understand that. You know, I really, convenience is one thing. It's something that we all look for. You got to be quick. You want to run in, but it doesn't take that. Once you train yourself to look for the healthier foods, and I really started reading labels, and that's what made the difference for me. And to be honest with you, I feel so much better about myself and my diet. And we eat together. We stopped. We shut the TV off now, and we have our dinner together when I'm home, and it's great.
It sounds great, and you should give your wife a big hug for putting you into this, because you know what? You sound really happy, Andrew.
Yep, it really changed. It really changed our perspective, and that's what it is. It's just a matter of taking the time, going to the grocery store, buy the healthy stuff. So no more chips in the house. There's carrots or cucumbers or. Takes a little bit more time, but honest to goodness, your health is worth every minute you spend on it.
Final question for you, Andrew. What about when you fall off the wagon, or in your case, well, I hope you don't fall off the truck, but anyway, when you, what about then? Do you beat yourself up, or is that just part of the life change, that the attitude is, maybe there'll be times where I do grab that handful of M&Ms or whatever it may be that your weak spot is, but it's okay.
It's and that you hit it exactly, Savannah. It's all right. I do now that I'm down to a weight that I feel great at. I've added some exercise into my life also,
yep.
and And, you know what? If I want a Big Mac once in a while, I have a Big Mac. But Subway can make a real nice salad, too. And your many of your callers have said it's about moderation.
Yeah. All right, I'm calling your wife. Moderation. I'm telling her about that Big Mac. Okay.
She knows I cheat once in a while.
You sound like a lovely man, Andrew. I'm glad you took the time to call in. You made my day.
Oh, thank you very much. Bye-bye. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye. Andrew Inglis in Kamloops, BC. He's a truck driver. He used to grab food on the go, and you can just imagine how easy that would be to do because we've all done it, you know, when we're on those road trips. Hey, let's just grab it, take it in the car and go. And now he stops at the grocery store and buys healthy food for him, and he sounds great. Darlene Jackson, I'm looking for your thoughts as well on this question of how we tackle our obesity problems in Canada. We're just getting bigger and bigger, Darlene. What do we need to do?
Well, Suhanna, thank you for bringing up such an important topic. I was actually baking some tea buns for my mother, and I turned on CBC Radio, and I heard your topic, so I just thought I had to call in. I've lived in Western Canada, and now I'm back home in Eastern Canada. And I think one of the shocking things for me, Suhanna, was living in Edmonton and then coming back to St. John's was we do have the same access to the food that we would have in the larger centers across the country. But here being on an island, food here costs a whole lot more. So I would love to see a national food program or something that our federal government takes some initiative in so that Canadians all across the country, no matter where they are, have equal access to food and that prices are not according to transportation costs and all of that. I think that everybody should be able to pay for our basics, like our whole wheat breads and our fruits and vegetables, and especially our dairy, should be a price fixed right across the country. That's one of the first things.
One of the things we have talked about, Darlene, if I can just jump in, is the economics of being healthy and eating well. One of the things in the report that the Senate committee had discussed was a tax on things like soda pop. Or, you know, what do you think about a tax on junk food? And then you move that money over to lowering the cost of so-called healthy foods and fresh fruits and vegetables, that kind of thing. But who decides what's junk food? And
I think we have enough well-trained dietitians across the country, Suhanna, that could certainly weigh in on that.
Okay.
I'm an educator. I'm not a medical person, but I do have a family member that's a dietitian, and she's always shaking her head with, a lot of dietitians across Canada do feel that our federal government does lag behind in spearheading and setting up some of those initiatives. Two of my siblings lived in the north for a number of years, and coming from like a place like Newfoundland where food is expensive and going to the north, you can see why our indigenous population, the health, their diabetes and all of those things are the way they are because they really have the bad end of the stick in terms of being able to access fresh fruits and vegetables at an economic something that all families can afford. So that's number one. I think number two is our advertising towards our young children. I remember my kids are in their, they're not kids anymore, my adult children now, we used to have meltdowns in the grocery aisle because they were insisting that I buy them fruit roll-ups.
Yep.
And I was trying to explain to them, no, mommy is going to buy you apples and oranges and bananas. And I would take the fruit roll-up box and I would read to them the ingredients. And I know families are even busier now these days than probably even I was back when my children were young. But we have to stop and take the time and educate our children. Look at the number of dyes that are in the fruit roll-ups. And I was in primary school. I was an educator my whole life. And watching little children trading out their, big shiny red apple for the kid across the aisle who had the fruit roll-up.
Yep.
And so some parents are doing a good job with sending these good snacks to the schools. But what ends up happening is their child wants the junk food.
Yeah.
And
you know what? That's part of our discussion as well, Darlene. We were talking about advertising, and I wish I could get into it with you because there are lots of great comments about what is appropriate advertising for young kids when it comes to those, you know, kinds of easy, fast junk foods. But I'm going to leave it there, Darlene, because I do have a couple of people I want to get on before we run out of time. So
for
I want to thank you. You've been a great guest, Darlene Jackson in St. John's, Newfoundland. I want to go to the other end of the country, Vancouver. I'm going to get this right. I know I am. Think positively. Maram Yazdani, how are you? Did I get it?
Yes. The H is pronounced Mahram.
Mahram Yazdani. Yeah. How's that?
Yes.
Okay.
Awesome.
You know what? I've had so many people call me Susanna, Hosanna, that I really try to take some time with somebody's name because mine has been butchered so many ways from Sunday. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, a long time ago, when I was a certified translator of German back in Iran, we came across a book, over 200 pages. The client brought this to us. He wanted to print it. It was nothing, just about how to chew your food, the whole book.
You mean like physically just chewing your food, not like colloquially chewing the fat kind of thing?
Anything. When you produce enough saliva in your mouth before the food goes down, you get rid of your diabetes. You have more metabolism. There's no yo-yo effect. People focus on stuff that they always dream, like going to the gym. And instead of teaching our children what to eat, we have to teach them how. How many times? Minimum 25 times every bite. And once you have a bite in your mouth, your hands should be busy with reading or something, so you don't put anything else in your mouth.
Maham, let me ask you this as well. Aside from chewing more, which I have a daughter who I think just swallows, doesn't chew, she is pretty fast, but does it change, do you think it would change our relationship to food as a family? Because right now it is about eating fast and then, hey, we got to get to swim class, or eating fast and we got hockey practice. You know what I mean? We don't slow down.
It does change, and you don't get hungry every hour because you are getting nutrition. Your body, your brain says this person doesn't need to have another burger or fries. This is very important. People do not pay attention to this.
All right. I'm going to make sure. How about this, Maham? I'm going to count. Next, when I have dinner tonight, I know I'm having lamb and peas and something else. And Peter told me it might be potatoes. But anyway, I'm going to count my chews. Thank you very much, Maham.
25 times minimum, and no drink while you have food in your mouth.
Okay.
Because it doesn't get digested.
I'll try it. I'm good for that. I'll try it.
Even water.
Yes. That's Maham Yazdani in Vancouver, B.C. Elm Creek, Manitoba. Desiree Tanner, you made it. I know you've called us and you've been patient, and I want to thank you for that. What do we need in order to tackle our obesity problems in Canada, Desiree?
Well, I start off from an interesting position. Like, my parents still farm actively in rural Manitoba, so I think I'm a little bit unique from some of the callers who are calling in from more urban settings. But I think that people really do need to make more of a connectedness with their food system. I think a lot of people have lost touch with how food is grown and how food is produced. And I think that that creates far-reaching rippling effects into what kind of foods we value and what kind of foods we choose to put our money into.
Yep.
So I think that people just need to have a deeper connectedness and a better way of understanding the food system. So, I grew up, having held a chicken and gathering eggs, and, you know, I milked the cows growing up. And so I had that background and that narrative. And, you know, I was able, if you threw a handful of vegetable seeds in my hand, I could pick out and tell you, you know, which ones are peas or beans or carrot seeds.
You know what, that's a pretty cool education to have and pretty cool knowledge.
Yeah, and I think that I'm really amazed to see that there are some school systems that are really valuing that too. So I know that the school that's in my community and some others, they've started like a gardening program. So they'll offset the cost of running a canteen with fresh fruits and vegetables by including the kids in the growing process and bringing in different gardeners to help the kids garden. So
gotta leave it there, Desiree.
Yeah,
I want to thank you.
Any way that they can connect is great.
Appreciate it, Desiree Tanner. You know what? I've got Kathleen Monroe on the line. Kathleen, you're going to be my last caller. It's Suhanna in Toronto. And if I cut you short, it's not because I'm being rude. It's simply because of time. I'm going to leave you with the last word on your thoughts on this obesity issue in Canada.
Well, I think I agree with all the other callers. We really need to educate our children. I'm a kindergarten teacher. And, you know, I try and encourage my parents to send healthy snacks. And I was telling your producer that the flack I get because I don't allow juice boxes in my classroom is unbelievable. And the portions that they send, and I don't allow junk food, so that means no fruit roll-ups or bear paws. And
we had one teacher call in, Kathleen, who said that some kids brought in a buffet instead of a snack.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that more is better? That there's food. Is there some kind of competition for snack foods that parents send with their kids?
I have some parents that are just amazing. They send little chopped up strawberries and cucumbers and snow peas, and then there's the parent that sends the processed cheese and the sticks, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just takes a few seconds. Like, we try to eat, I have a big chart up in my classroom that my coworker made, and we try to eat from the rainbow every day, you know. So did Johnny yep. bring in something green, did so-and-so bring in purple, and we talk about it, and whether it's a fruit or a vegetable, and whether it's good for our bones or our muscles or
Kathleen, that type we of thing. We have talked about the importance of giving kids those building blocks for having that good relationship with food, knowing what's a healthy food, and I think you're a big part of that. So I want to thank you for making the time. Talk to me today. Appreciate it. Here
it
on
was
Cross
a great
Country
show. Checkout. It was a really interesting show. I loved it.
Thanks, Kathleen. And that's it for this week. I want to thank everyone who called today because you were all great. If you missed part of the program, though, you can listen again anytime online. Go to our website at cbc.ca/checkup. You'll find streaming audio, MP3 downloads, podcasts, short and long links to articles, and you can read through the show highlights or join the social media conversation, which, by the way, continues online. Download the CBC Radio app on your phone. There's a great idea. You can get it on Google Play or the App Store. Coming up on CBC Radio 1, The World This Weekend has a report on the threats coming from President Donald Trump around U.S. steel tariffs and how Canadian business is preparing for the worst. You know, we love to hear from you, so why not send us an email? checkup@cbc.ca. On Twitter and Facebook, you can find us by searching for Checkup CBC. I do want to take a moment and thank everyone who helped this week, because as you know, I've been sitting in this chair for Duncan McHugh, and they've had to deal with me, and they're very patient. So thank you to Shefali Sojani, Blue Sky, and the Saskatchewan Noon Show, Paula Sanderson, Ann Chu, and Chuck Mulgat. Our digital producers are Samantha Louie and Elena Ghosh. Technical production and editing, Yelena Urak. Cross Country Checkup is produced by Charles Shanks and Annalisa Cosma, with lots of help this week from Susan McReynolds. Next week, as I mentioned, Duncan McHugh will be back in the chair. But I want to thank you for your patience with me filling in, and thank you for listening. I'm Suhanna Marchand.